This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Imagine a world where your neighbour, your boss, even Vladimir Putin could stick around forever. That's right. Well, it sounds wild, but that's exactly what Putin's been caught talking about, using organ transplants to cheat deaths. So could he actually pull it off? Well, joining us is Julian Copland, lecturer in bioethics at Monash University. Julian, welcome to Drive.
Hi, good to talk to you.
Now, when you hear a world leader casually talking about using organ transplants to live forever, what goes through your mind?
So I guess the first question is whether it's possible, and the second question is whether it would be ethical. So I think for the first question, probably not, at least not in the way that Putin was caught describing. I think organ transplantation as a route to immortality faces a few challenges. One is where you get the organs from, but the other one is that aging is a kind of a multi-systemic process, and as you become older, you become more frail, it becomes harder to recover from, say, repeated major transplant surgeries. And the third big problem is that, of course, the brain also ages, and the brain also suffers things like Alzheimer's and dementia, and you can't quite transplant a brain and still have another person at the end of that, you know, hypothetical brain transplant that you would at the beginning. So I do think it is possible to slow aging. I do think that there is reason to think that there might be some advances in being able to sort of delay the aging process. And I think that raises some really interesting ethical questions.
So let's say some sort of supermarket and you could just buy organs from a vending machine. I mean, here's a hypothetical for you. And forgetting the brain part, how long do you reckon you could potentially extend your life by if you could replace organs?
Well, look, it's a really good question. I'm a philosopher rather than a medical scientist, so all I can give is some sort of hunches and gut instincts. But I think, you know, an organ transplant is a major surgery. Immunosuppression, which you have to take afterwards to stop your body from rejecting the organ, that's quite taxing on the body as well. I can't imagine there's some kind of viable life where you swap out a lung and then a heart and then your liver and then a kidney and then the other kidney and then back to the heart and kind of, yeah.
And the other thing is, I suppose ethically, if we look at it that way, organs are already in a short supply. What kind of ethical problems would we face if the world's most powerful people tried to monopolize them just to stay in power?
So I think there's one thing worth noting here, which is that as far as I can tell, Putin's comments weren't really talking about taking organs that are sort of part of the general pool that would be going to other people. But instead, he's recently invested quite a bit of money into trying to discover ways to grow organs for transplants, you know, in vitro, in a dish. And many others, you know, in other countries are doing the same thing. It's a really exciting area of biotechnology, but it's one that's a very, very long way from reaching fruition. You know, we can kind of grow miniaturized approximations of organs that look a little bit like them, but nothing that could be transplanted into a human, and probably not, you know, over the rest of, you know, Putin is 72, probably not anytime likely to get to that point anytime over the next 20, 30 years.
Let's talk about the brain. You mentioned obviously we can't transplant a brain. I imagine it would have a completely new life experience and memories, etc. What would the what would the ethical position be if you could just get a USB, download your brain into it, put a new brain in you, and then upload the existing you? What would happen then?
Yeah, fascinating. Look, that's a really good question. There's a really good question there about would that thing that is inhabiting your body still be you because it shares your memories? Or is the fact that your kind of consciousness has been interrupted, does that mean that there's some new person that just happens to share all your memories? So, I mean, I can imagine a kind of scenario where you can go do this kind of procedure and then you go upload the memories and the personality into a new person, and then the first person's still around, and then you tell them, look, you know, we've captured you, we've cloned your mind, so now we can execute you and it's fine, and you don't need to worry about it because this new version of you is already walking around. And I think a lot of people would sort of be a bit taken aback by that, would think that whatever that new entity is, it isn't quite them, no matter how closely it resembles them.
And would you
definitely...
would you say to the existing person, look, you can throw your hissy fit, it doesn't matter because we're not uploading that. That's staying with you.
Well, it's not going to harm the person that we now judge to be you, because they're not going to have any memory of this hissy fit. They're going to blissfully be continuing your life. And again, there's all this interest in finding ways to upload the mind and upload the brain, and I worry that they're not actually going to be preserving the thing that we value, which is some kind of continuous mental experience. So the thing that's experiencing the world right now can continue on. And I think that a lot of, you know, these proposals to scan the brain, create a good digital approximation, upload it to the cloud, or put it in some robotic body sometime in the future isn't actually going to be achieving anything that we ought to care about.
Imagine if you didn't hit the eject disk safely button and you pulled it out and it wiped you off. I mean, that's a risk, isn't it? It could happen.
Oh, just a slight corruption. You know, you're back, but now your favorite color is red instead of blue. Oh.
Yep. I wonder though, beyond transplants, I mean, you know, researchers are experimenting with drugs, aren't they, and genetics and even diet to slow aging. What do you reckon is, I mean, I know it's not your area, but what do you reckon looks the most promising?
There's quite a few things that look quite promising, and there's quite a few things we've seen in animals that have done quite well. And you've mentioned a lot of them. So we've managed to greatly prolong the lives of fruit flies and laboratory mice by making a few genetic changes. We've greatly managed to prolong the lives of dogs by putting them on a very restrictive, low-calorie diet. One thing that's really exciting is the idea of cellular rejuvenation. So you can take cells and kind of revert them back into a more primitive state. Ooh. And I think also with mice models, we've seen instances where this seems to help mice live longer, although when you wind back the clock on cells, they become kind of younger, but also more likely to give rise to cancer. So there's a kind of push and pull effect there. And probably the most outlandish one, I think, is that it seems like connecting old mice up to the blood supply of a young mouse seems to produce increased longevity as well. And I know of at least one human who has been getting blood transfusions from their adult child in an attempt to prolong their own longevity, hoping that those results will end up applying to humans as well. So there's a lot of kind of, you know, irons in the fire, so to speak. There's a lot of things that might help. And I can imagine a world where we see pretty dramatic lifespan extension, particularly if this research continues to get funding, whether that's from people like Putin or, you know, tech market billionaires, of which quite a few of them are investing a lot of their money into anti-aging as well. I can imagine us living in a world in the not too distant future, in some number of decades, where people live much longer than they currently do.
I reckon there's a horror movie there where, you know, the old people run around sucking the blood out of the young people and say, give me your life. is it wrong to want longer lives, though, or is it simply human nature to push back against death?
So, look, I have my own views here. A lot of people think that there's something a little bit questionable about it. You know, there's this view that, well, you've already got, you know, 80-something years, probably. That's a blessing and a gift, and you should just kind of accept what's natural. There's no need to keep kind of pushing beyond that. There's also a kind of, you know, Epicurus, ancient Greek philosopher, said very famously, we don't need to fear death because as soon as death happens to us, we're not there to experience it anymore. Mm. We're going to be, you know, unaffected by it. But I think both those things are wrong. I think Epicurus is wrong because even if we're not suffering from death, we're missing out on everything that makes life good. I'm not going to have any more coffees in bed with my partner. Once I'm dead, I'm not going to get to, like, play Mario Kart with my kids once I'm dead. And those are good experiences. I'll be missing out on something there. And for like the natural life, you know, the beginning of the 20th century, the natural lifespan was about 30 years shorter than it is today. And if we thought that people should just content themselves with a natural lifespan, we wouldn't be living as long as we do now. So I think I'm worried about exactly what a world with greatly longer lives is going to look like. I'm worried about autocrats who show no inclination to retire, living sort of till 250. But I don't think there's anything morally questionable about wanting to, say, fund anti-aging research to try to give people longer, healthier lives.
Kieran says Barbara Streisand cloned her dog. She did, didn't she?
I know that animal cloning does exist. I don't know about Streisand. I haven't read about that specifically.
I imagine it would still be a completely different animal, like a different personality. It wouldn't be exactly the same. A couple more messages have come in as well on the screen. Someone says, living longer? No, I don't want to outlive my kids. And this one here saying, yes, please, I want to see what Melbourne looks like in the year 2200, Matt from Richmond. That just reminds me of, I suppose, the Prince song, you know, 1999. All of a sudden it appeared. It came really quickly. Yeah. And this one here saying, definitely not. Life's precious because it ends. That's from Glenn in Reservoir. That's a good point.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think our lives are made more meaningful by us, you know, knowing that they end at some point and we can't just faff around forever. But maybe a 200-year life, if we're still going to be able to be motivated to do things, maybe 200 years instead of, you know, 80-something, 90-something years is still going to give us what we need, but give us a few more coffees, a few more rounds of Mario Kart.
Julian, I look forward to chatting with you in 150 years' time.
Yeah, it's a date. I'll chat with you again then.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it.
All right, thanks. Bye.
That was Julian Copland, lecturer in bioethics at Monash University.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.